And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
I'm going to have to do it once again, everyone. Welcome to be with us, Friday edition of It's Your Turn. Open talk to begin the program today. Phone number is 283-2525. We're going to be talking a little bit later about bridging the divide between globalism and populism. You know, we have a populist president here in the United States right now, Donald Trump. But we're not the only country, not the only democracy that has leaned toward populism. It's happening in France. It's happening in Germany. It's happening in the United Kingdom. So what's the deal? Well, we'll talk with Professor Alexander Munz-Rubial about that a little bit later on the program today. And we're also going to be talking about your gut health with a physician who will join us for a few minutes later on the program today, Dr. Raphael Kelman. So we'll talk about that a little bit later, too. But open talk to begin with, 283-2525, the number, 283-2525. I had not looked at the Butler, Pennsylvania blog for a while. And I had a couple of minutes this morning when I was online and I checked it out. This is the blog that's been maintained for many years by a Butler native who has lived in Germany for several decades, actually, Charles Singolani. I've never met him, but I've been reading the Butler blog for a few years since it was brought to my attention. Some wonderful stories and pictures on there. And it's just amazing that this man has maintained this over the years, even though he's lived in Germany for quite some time. He had a picture that was actually a photograph of a matchbook cover that was advertising the hot dog sandwich shop in downtown Butler, known by most folks as the hot dog shop. Long gone now. How long's the hot dog shop been gone? 7, 8 years? I bet it is, really. Because, first it went out of business, and then they tore down all the buildings, and they were making way for the new hotel downtown. I bet it's 7 or 8 years. Maybe it's even a little longer. I don't know. Anyway, on this matchbook cover, it's kind of funny. It says, the hot dog sandwich shop. 2,000 pounds of wieners used weekly. Think about that. That's a ton. 2,000 pounds of wieners used weekly. Well, they were good, weren't they, though? Yeah, they were good. I always thought that the hot dog shop, now long gone but not forgotten, served a great breakfast. You could zip in there and get a quick breakfast any time of day, really. What I liked was something that they called thin cakes. Thin cakes. Now, I like pancakes every once in a while, but so many restaurants that you go to, knocking them, but you order pancakes and they're so fluffy and huge, you know, you get a plate or two or three of them and you can't finish them all. The hot dog shop was the only place I knew that advertised and made thin cakes, and you could get a couple of pancakes in there and they were much, much thinner. They're very good. They're cooked through. They were never burned. They were always perfect. But they called them thin cakes. Boy, you get a couple of thin cakes and a couple of eggs and a cup of coffee, you were in business, weren't you? Yeah. The hot dog shop. Fondly remembered, I think, by many folks in Butler. I had an uncle who was originally from this area, but at a relatively young age moved to Connecticut. But he would come back, you know, to visit family pretty much once a year. And that was always one of his first stops. He always wanted to go to Butler and eat at the hot dog shop. And he would do it two or three times while he was home visiting before he went back to Connecticut. No, I don't think he took any hot dogs back with him, but he sure enjoyed them while he was here. Ah, yes, the hot dog shop. Well, that was a kind of a neat picture there on the Butler blog. And there was one other picture that I wanted to share with you. I'm searching through here until I find it. Oh, here it is. It was a picture of, well, what some Butlerites who've been around here for a while refer to as the old post office. It's the home of the Ark now and has been for many, many, many years. The post office, the main post office in Butler down at the corner of South Main and Washington Street, not Washington Street, Wayne Street, was built in the 1960s, late 60s, I believe. I was not around here then. But it was part of a federal urbanization project. They tore down a whole bunch of buildings there and built the post office. But the old one was kind of a neoclassical design. And the picture that's on the Butler blog is a view that you don't often see because you'd have to stop and get out of your car on Jefferson Street and walk across the street and take a look at it from that angle. But it looks kind of like a Greek temple. You know? And somebody told me that that was a common architectural design for post offices back in the day. I have no idea when that building was built. There's probably a cornerstone on it somewhere, and you could see. But again, it hasn't been used as a post office for decades. But a very beautiful building. Neoclassical design. Got the columns in the front, you know? Yeah. Look kind of like a Greek temple. They used to build banks that way, too. And the most prominent example in our area is what used to be the PNC Bank downtown. It's now the home of the Working Man's Store. It's right at the corner of Main and Jeff, right dead in the center of town. And if you've ever stopped to look at that building, yeah, it's kind of a Greek temple design, too. They did that for banks because, you know, they wanted to portray the image of, you know, lasting forever, you know, standing the test of time. Put your money in our bank. Yeah. Well, anyway, nice pictures there and always nice stories, too, on the Butler, Pennsylvania blog. Next time you're online and you have a couple of minutes, you might want to check it out. And all you have to do is Google the Butler, Pennsylvania blog, and you'll find it. Charles Singolani is the keeper of that blog. Open Talk, 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. You know, just talking about having some thin cakes and eggs at the hot dog shop makes me hungry for some. It does. There were always two or three people that you knew when you went in there, right? Yeah. Okay, it's Open Talk. Let's get to the people. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Yeah, hello, Dave.
Hi. Hi.
I heard earlier on when you started your show this morning, you were talking of the hot dog shop.
Yes,
And your memories there. And I wanted to bring out, I don't know whether you had ever heard this in the past, but I'd heard this, that when the hot dog shop, you were talking about they went through 2,000 hot dogs a day.
Well, no, it was 2,000 pounds of hot dogs a week.
Oh, 2,000 pounds.
Yeah.
And there must have been, in the chili sauce that they use, there must have been a fair percentage of Heinz ketchup that was used in that sauce.
I would guess that's true. Yeah.
I had heard at one time, when they were in their heyday back then, they were the largest customer that H.J. Heinz had for ketchup.
Yeah, I could believe that. I really could. Yeah,
yeah.
I could.
And it was amazing. You talk about the poundage. You'd be walking down Jefferson Street, and you'd look in the window and see that the cook in front of the grill with the hot dogs on there, and he'd be putting package after package of hot dogs on that large griddle he had in front of him to brown the hot dogs.
I forgot about that. You could see it right through the window there. You could watch them cooking up the dogs. Yeah. Well,
it's quite a place, and it's surprising that they did the business they did, and then it dwindled, and they went out of business the way they went out of business. And it was amazing to see how many people they could serve and how quickly they could do it.
I can remember as a young kid, and I'm talking, I don't know, probably 7, 8, 9 years old, we would stop in there. We would come to Butler for shopping, usually on Saturday, because we lived about 25, 30 miles away. But when you stop in there around lunchtime, it was so packed. And I can remember standing in the back. You know, you have to go back to the back, and you just wait for a booth to open up, you know, or a seat to open up, and then you rush to it and, you know, try to claim it so that you could have something. But hey, good stuff. I mean, you know, it wasn't all that expensive. They had great pie in there, you know?
Oh, yeah. They had the best chocolate milk.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Marlboro chocolate milk, and they kept it ice cold.
Yeah.
That's what made it so good.
Get chocolate milk in there, too. You're right. I mean, it wasn't the biggest place. Quite frankly, it wasn't the cleanest place. But it sure had good food.
Yeah, and in the busy days, I would have customers drive up from Pittsburgh to come up to see me and to do business, and they would come in and sit down in a chair beside my desk and would start talking. I'd look, and they'd arrive about just after lunchtime, and I'd be sitting there. I'd look at him and I'd say, "Oh, you drove up to Butler and had lunch before you'd come down." They'd say, "Well, yes, we did, but how did you know that?" Well, I said, "Because I can smell you were at the hot dog shop." that would always really surprise them.
There was a nice aroma from the hot dog sauce. And Jim Klupnati sitting there, you know, at the cashier's chair. We've got that circular booth there right in the front of the store.
Oh, yeah.
Good one.
I moved to Georgia for several years in the late 90s. And I was there for almost 20 years, and down there, the main hot dog shop is right near Georgia Tech, and it's called the Varsity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this place is large. Yeah, and it's still there, and of course, it was probably, it could have been six times or more than six times larger than the hot dog shop, and they had everything. They had drive-in service, where you drive in, park your car at an angle, and a waitress would come out to wait on you on roller skates. And, of course, they had their chili sauce and whatever, their hot dogs they were famous for. But their chili sauce was nothing compared to the Butler Hot Dog Shop. It really wasn't.
Well, it was pretty good stuff. There are bigger places. University towns usually have one. There's a place down in Oakland near the Pitt campus called The O, which is a famous hot dog shop. You were talking about the one in Georgia Tech. There are bigger ones, I suppose, but I always thought that the hot dog shop in Butler was just the right size.
And if you want to get a good hot dog, that's where you're going to get it.
That's for sure.
Today, if you still want to get that quality of the hot dog and the chili, and the if you're having French fries and you want the orange gravy that they had down at the original hot dog shop, you can get it all down at the dog shop, and it tastes just the same.
Wow. Good memories, my friend.
It's called the Dog House down at Greater Butler Mart.
Yeah, I know where it is. It's right. It's in the corner of the Greater Butler Mart there.
Yep, you'll get the same food right there.
Son of a gun. Thanks, my friend. Okay. Good to talk with you today.
Okay, Dave. Have a good one.
For some reason, I'm hungry for a dog right now.
Hey, okay. I know.
Thanks a lot. 283-2525 is our number. It's open talk here today on a Friday. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Dave, are you taking open subject today?
Yes, open talk. Go right ahead.
Sure. Okay. I wanted to talk about the legislation to keep the government going.
Yes.
And I see our representative, Mike Kelly, voted no. I wonder if he wanted another shutdown. I would hope not. I can't imagine that. It's insanity. And beyond that, I guess he made a comment about fiscal responsibility or something to that effect. I wonder if he thinks that the new addition of another $1 trillion of national debt is physically responsible. And I think he voted for that.
There's a real political divide in our country right now. I guess that doesn't come as any surprise to anyone. And it's kind of funny because President Trump had a lengthy news conference this morning, went on and on. And he reluctantly signed the bipartisan legislation, which went through the House and the Senate. And you're right, Congressman Kelly voted against it in the House, but it passed. Now, the president signed it, but then he declared a national emergency, and he's going to be taking funds from other areas and put them toward his wall, you know. So we'll
and
see.
How sad that he's going to take money from disaster funds that are real emergencies, real national emergencies, disaster funds for hurricanes, et cetera. Presidents in the past have used that disaster as a means of getting money. But I think when 9/11 happened, we absolutely needed that. George W. Bush at that time declared a national emergency. That's the kind of thing that Donald Trump doesn't seem to understand.
Yeah, that was.
And I thank you for allowing me this time. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks a lot. I think that's what the law was intended for. Is no question about it. I had two. I have two comments on it. First of all, I heard a quote yesterday from then citizen Donald Trump, candidate Donald Trump, and he ripped former President Obama for. Using this legislation, claimed it was unconstitutional, and now he's doing it himself, number one. Number two, if this is such a national emergency, and I haven't heard anyone address this before, if this is indeed such a national emergency, why didn't the president push it over the past 2 years? Whenever Republicans controlled both chambers, controlled the Senate and the House, And of course, the White House. I mean, there were 2 years there where, I mean, if it was such an emergency, if it was such a national emergency, why did they pass the legislation? You know, did it all of a sudden become a national emergency? And what happened to Mexico paying for the wall anyway? Wasn't that the big chant for a couple of years? Going to build a wall and Mexico's going to pay for it. It just seems like such a shifting thing, you know. 1 week it's one thing, and 1 week is the next thing. Well, I don't know. that's the way it goes. I would imagine that there will be challenges to the president's plan to take money from other areas, specifically where it's going to come from. I don't know. I suppose he would have to declare that at some point. But we'll see. We'll see how it shakes down. 283-2525 is the number. Open talk on the program today, 283-2525. We've got to take a break here, so let's do that, and we will return with more of the Friday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR in just a moment. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary, and the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
It's the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. Open talk right now at 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi. Just a couple more things about the hot dog shop, if
yes.
you don't mind.
Yes, please.
One of them was... if you recall, the waitresses never wrote anything down. They just hollered out the order.
That's true, yeah.
To the cooks. The only thing they did, I think, was write up the receipt that they took up the cash register.
I forgot all about that. Yeah, they would just yell it out across the room.
to the cook. Pickle also.
You've got it.
Yeah. Well, I was married to one of the waitresses. Another thing about the place, they used to have at the end there, they had a Weenie Wednesday where they'd have a line outside of the place, people trying to get in.
What, did they have a sale on hot dogs on Wednesday or something?
Yeah, they were a buck, I think.
Weenie Wednesday. By the way, I have to thank my producer, Pat Parker, who looked up when the hot dog shop closed. You're not going to believe it. It was 2004. My gosh, it's 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow, I can't believe it's that long. Wow.
Anyhow, that's all I had to say there.
Thanks. Good to talk with you today.
Okay.
Yeah, nice to chat with you. You too. 283-2525 is our number. 283-2525. Wow, 15 years ago since the hot dog shop closed? Wow. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. Hello? I just wanted to mention something about the hot dog shop, too. I was a very young child when I was going to that place with my mother and my grandmother, and they had doors on the sides of the booth.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the one cashier that was always at the desk... she was from up by Six Points.
Uh-huh.
She worked there for years and years and years. And so, like I said, I was a very young child when we went there, and that was
I don't remember doors on the... That would be... You'd have kind of like a private room there then, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, kind of. Of course, I'm 8 years older than you are, so I know this was before your time, but I just wanted to... put that little comment in there. So
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Thank you, my friend. Thanks.
Bye.
283-2525 is our number. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Dave, earlier you were talking about the wall.
Yes.
And the money and where the money was going to come from. And,
yes, uh-huh.
And I listened to his to Donald's speech this morning, and he has another method that he's talking of pursuing. But, you know, the thing is, and he did say that initially that he was going to have Mexico pay for it, and Mexico could easily, the way I see it, one of the easiest ways to pay for it, and Mexico would be paying for it indirectly, the money from the drug lord El Chapo.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He has, it was like $40 million or more than $40 million that they had taken in from him. Oh, that would pay for the wall several times over and have money left over. And I can't understand why they couldn't, use some of that money to pay for the wall.
Well, you mean the Mexican government or the U.S. government, or who you're talking about? El Chapo was just convicted in New York, so he's going to go to prison here in the U.S.
His money has been surrendered to the United. The United States has his money now.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did you say it was? How much?
It was over $40 million or $40 billion.
$40 billion. Holy moly!
Yeah, billion.
Wow. Yeah, that would.
There's plenty of money there that would pay for the wall and have money left over.
Well, how come the president doesn't do that then?
I've heard it mentioned at some time, but he has these other plans that he outlined today, and I would think using El Chapo's money would be a much easier process. But
would seem to be. Do you think it's a real national emergency that we need to build this wall?
Countries all over the world, most all countries have walls. How do you have a country without a wall when you have intruders, especially the people that are coming into this country here? I mean, I heard one Democratic congressman or whatever mention something about, well, you know, there's no proof of, or, you know, people aren't coming over here murdering our citizens or whatever. Well, that's a ludicrous statement. There are countless records showing that American citizens have been murdered, raped, you know, injured in multiple ways by illegals coming across. I mean, you can't make a statement like that.
I hear you. Let me ask you one other question, though, and this has puzzled me, and I don't bring it up to be argumentative. If it's such a national emergency, why didn't the president push it for the first 2 years that he was in office, whenever he had control of both the House and the Senate? I mean, he had 2 years.
Well, that's a good question.
You know, I just wonder how all of a sudden it became a national emergency. I don't know. Hey,
well, the thing is, it is an emergency, and there have been presidents in the past that have talked of it but didn't do anything about it. And I think that now, with the way things are and with crime that's coming across the border, I think I can't understand why everybody doesn't feel that it's something that needs to be dealt with.
Well, that's terrific. I appreciate your comments. Thanks for sharing with us here today. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank
sure,
you.
Sure.
Bye now.
So long. Time for one more quick call. Caller, are you going to have the last word here today? Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hey, Dave.
Yes, hi.
I just read the other day that to build the entire wall would cost so much money, even if Trump cut his $5 billion, whatever he wanted, it would be like 500 miles of wall.
Yeah.
And no, I'm not afraid of the immigrants. It's not a crisis.
It's more than 500 miles, I'll tell you that.
I know, but that's like that $5 billion, you would only be able to build actual like 5 miles of fortified wall or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's impossible to build a wall over that barrier. So, it's a manufactured crisis. I think Trump thinks he's going to get a Supreme Court where he packed it and a rule in favor of him, which I don't think will happen. But anyhow, hey, thanks for your time, Dave.
Oh, thanks for your comments. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about globalism versus populism. We'll be speaking with guest Professor Alexander Rubial. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR, and we will be back in just a moment. One of our sponsors on the program today is Butler Motor Tours, and they've already released their list of wonderful trip ideas for this coming spring and summer, including to the Millennium Theater in eastern Pennsylvania, Lancaster. They've been doing biblical epics down there for many, many years now. And the new show this year is called Jesus at the Millennium Theater. Sight and Sound Millennium Theater, very popular. They're taking a trip out there in April 4th and 5th, out and back, see the show and then come back. You can check it out at their website, butlerbus.com. They're also taking a trip, a three-day trip to Washington, D.C. during the National Cherry Blossom Festival in the first week of April. That would be nice. April 5th, 6th, and 7th. And those are just two of the getaway ideas available through Butler Motor Tours, a local company. They're on South Monroe Street in Butler. They've been around for more than 75 years. You can check out all of their offerings online at butlerbus.com. butlerbus.com.
This year for Valentine's Day, give your sweetheart more than a box of chocolates and a mushy card. How about an evening of dining and dancing at Tanglewood, your hometown center for entertainment, Saturday, February 16th, with the Dorrells, featuring music for baby boomers through the 90s. This five-piece band is one of the area's best for partying and dancing. Doors open at 6. Station buffet dinner by Chef George at 7. Showtime at 8. All this for $25. As always, it's BYOB. Tickets available at 287-0021.
If you're thinking about buying a car, truck, or SUV, or even if you just bought one, make sure you check out the great rates at Armco Credit Union. Through February 28th, you can get a 60-month loan on new and used vehicles for as low as 2.24 annual percentage rate. We'll even refinance your loan from another financial institution. It's never been easier to join, so call today for other rates and terms or visit us at armcocu.com to become a member. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and federally insured by NCUA.
I was just 49 when I started getting mail from AARP. AARP? Shoot, I was just getting started in life. Then I hit my 60s and retirement was on my mind. The big question was, did I prepare? What about healthcare? Are my finances in order? Not just for my wife and me, but for the kids and grandkids. I got the answers I needed from attorney Michael Pater, specializing in elder law, long-term care, Medicaid, and wills and estate planning, is attorney Michael Pater in the Handicap Accessible Morgan Center. Phone 287-7724.
Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler, a mainstay on Main Street for over 125 years. Pretty amazing. They're your headquarters for athletic shoes, and they have all the famous name brands there at Miller's. So whatever you prefer, Nike or Saucony or Rockport or Keds or New Balance, I like New Balance, or Skechers or Easy Spirit or Asics, they've got them all. They've got them all for every member of the family, men, women, teens, kids, athletic shoe headquarters. They've also got Rockport shoes and Trotters and Timberland shoes and boots, and Miller's is your headquarters for SAS comfort shoes as well for men and women in a variety of styles and colors. And believe me, they are comfortable, and they're made in the USA too. For 126 years, generations of folks from around here have been going to Miller's Shoes for shoes from the Ciprian family. You get a great selection, a good price, and a smile from the Ciprians. Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street, downtown Butler. A very timely subject, listeners, on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest joins us by telephone. He is Dr. Alexander Munz-Rubial, and he's written a book entitled Globalism Versus Nativism, How to Bridge the Digital Divide. Dr. Rubial, nice to have you with us. Nice to talk with you for a few minutes here today, sir.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be on your show.
Let's talk a little bit about, first of all, just to make sure that all of our listeners are on the same page, when you talk about nativism, is that pretty much the same as, populism that we see today in so many countries of the world, or is there a slight distinction?
Well, you could say that it's pretty much the same thing, that it's calling, that it's describing a phenomenon, with two different words. Mm-hmm. I would say that in a lot of countries around the world, we're beginning to see a bigger digital divide, which can lead to an economic divide between people who are, let's say, the winners of globalization, people who have the right careers, degrees in STEM, science, technology, engineering, mathematics, or they don't have a university degree in those careers, but they do have technical skills. These people tend to be open to trade, immigration. They're not hostile to automation that's coming at us with artificial intelligence, robots, and machines. And then we have people who, through no fault of their own, tend to live in smaller towns in the countryside, and they don't have those degrees in science, technology, engineering, mathematics, or technical skills that allow them to make a decent living. And they are, we have to understand, they are afraid of the future, especially with automation. The world is very complex. We have climate change, we have increasing inequality, we have terrorism, we have trade agreements that are not easy to understand for everybody. We have automation that's going to displace or destroy a lot of jobs. According to, for example, Forbes, 1 in 5 jobs in the world will be affected or destroyed by the year 2030. Now, some of these jobs people can retrain for other jobs. So we have to understand the fears and the worries of people who vote for populist politicians and not simply complain about the divide in many countries or even in the United States, unfortunately, the political divide. We mm-hmm. have to try to understand the reasons why people vote for populist politicians, come up with ideas to bridge this divide, which I fear could grow as more and more people are replaced by machines, robots, artificial intelligence.
Let me, listeners, mention that our guest, Dr. Alexander Munz-Rubial, is a professor of OBS Business School. He's also a well-known author and a consultant. People here in the United States, sometimes, Dr. Rubial, we tend to be a little parochial. Now, obviously, we had the election of a populist presidential candidate 2 years ago with Donald Trump. But a lot of people might not realize this trend is being seen in other countries in the world. I'm thinking of France in particular. Would I be correct on that, sir?
Absolutely, absolutely. I actually began writing this book. I'm somebody who has always believed and still believe in international trade organizations. I was also speechwriter to the president of the World Bank, which, of course, as your listeners probably know, is not a private bank. It's a public development bank which promotes development around the world and fights poverty. So I'm still a believer in international institutions and in international trade agreements. But even in writing this book, I am traveling a lot around the United States and listening to people the same way that you do and have been doing for 20 years with your community in Butler County and in Pittsburgh and through your engagement in the Butler Little Theater and the Musical Guild. The same way that you do, I listen to people, I travel around countries, and yes, it's happening, the Yellow Vest Movement. We have, let's say, populist movements left-wing and right-wing. The Yellow Vest Movement in France would be a left-wing anti-system movement, which began as a protest about hiking diesel prices and has morphed into a kind of anti-system. We want to work less and we want more benefits. Of course, France is not known for people working really hard. It's different with America. But we do have populist governments, extreme right in Poland, in Hungary, which are telling people very irresponsibly, they're telling people basically, because the world is complex, and not everybody, unfortunately, because people are busy with their lives, they have to work, they don't have the time to follow these things. So that's what professors and you and the media can help people. They don't have the time to follow all these developments around the world. But you know, a lot of right-wing populists, but also left-wing, they say, you know, immigrants take your jobs, depress your wages, they're criminals, they bring in all their families, abuse the welfare system, and if they're Muslims, they're a threat to national security. Now, that is completely wrong, and that is completely inaccurate, and it's false. And the statistics show that the overwhelming majority of immigrants, whether it's to the European Union or to the United States, are law-abiding people who work hard. There are some exceptions, but, of course, the overwhelming majority are law-abiding, tax-paying, hard-working people. Actually, natives commit more crimes than immigrants. But, as I say, the world is complex, and populists give people very simple messages, and we have to try and, I think, President Obama in his last State of the Union address actually said that technology is wonderful, but we have to have a debate in society about the pluses and minuses of technology, because I think this debate should involve, you know, the media, like you're doing with me today, which I thank you. It should involve NGOs. It should involve corporations, individuals, regulators, governments, international institutions. Already we begin to see instances where technology is good. And I, for example, think so highly of Pittsburgh that it reinvented itself, you know, with universities and biotech and tourism. I love Pittsburgh. I go there, and I remember my Duckmobile tour. And so Pittsburgh has reinvented itself, and with technology, and I think the self-driving tests that were there carried out. The self-driving vehicles are carried out. But we need to push back a little bit, because we see, you know, near collisions of drones with airplanes. Gatwick Airport in the UK had to be closed down because of drone incidents. We see that, for example, in the Super Bowl, also the drones had to be confiscated by the FAA. You know, the government had to say that you cannot use 3D printers to print a gun. So the regulators also need to play a role, because technology usually is ahead of the curve in terms of developments, and regulators being able to catch up, and so that, you know, things will not happen to people.
Can you, the recent government shutdown, the partial government shutdown that we had here in the United States, does that reflect the divide between globalists and populists in a way?
To a certain extent, it does, and I'm very sad about it. Of course, you know, for me, it's hard because I always think about bringing people together. And right now, the United States, you know, whether you're Republican, Democrat, or Independent, it's the fact that the United States now, in July, will have a milestone of the longest expansion ever of the economy since July 2009, when the economy emerged from the recession. This year, July, will be 10 years, the longest period of economic expansion in U.S. history. Of course, eight of those years were under President Obama, but now under President Trump, it's two more years. And there's unemployment at a 50-year low of 4%. It doesn't matter whether whites, African-Americans, Hispanics, unemployment is at a 50-year low. The U.S. economy grew 2.9% last year. We are on our path to energy independence. And so it is a bit sad for me that as we look at the, obviously now the media is focusing so much at the 2020 presidential election, and I would have, for example, in my book there are chapters about, you know, my volunteering in the election campaign presidential for a certain candidate. I wish Vice President Biden would have run. I think so highly of him. But at the same time, I fear that, you know, let's face it, President Trump's base, I don't think they really care that much if the federal government shuts down. The states still do their work. You know, the states continue to make the school runs and hospitals. So when the federal government shuts down, what happens? There are consequences. You know, our national parks and museums close. But now in February, people may not care that much. And yes, the air travel is affected. But maybe people who vote for President Trump don't fly that much. So we have a big divide, and I'm concerned that the current candidates running for president on the Democratic side, that they do a little bit too much of this identity politics. You know, you have a governor in Pennsylvania, Tom Wolf, who is a Democrat. You have a Republican senator, Pat Toomey, who after the first shutdown, said he was actually going to introduce legislation so it would never happen again, right? And then you have another Democratic senator who is Bob Casey. So you're a kind of diverse state which has suffered also from loss of manufacturing jobs. And I've heard that a steel plant in Butler County is doing well. Obviously, we cannot hang on to steel and coal forever. But we can get some manufacturing back. Also, maybe some of the call centers in other countries are difficult to navigate because people in those countries, they may be nice people, but they don't live in America, you know. So I always say that, you know, President Trump maybe should get some of these call centers back to America. But President Trump, to his credit, did cut taxes, and for example, for corporations, which the U.S. had the highest corporate tax rate in the developed world, and now it's down to 21%. It was 35%. And also the Tax Cuts and Job Act of last year, what it did was American companies have $2 trillion of profits overseas because the corporate tax rate was so high in America, it was 35%. So they would just put their profits, you know, let's say in Ireland, and they would pay 12% corporate tax rate, and they would keep them in Ireland. And because Tax Cuts and Job Act allows these profits to be repatriated with a one-time payment of tax of 15 or 5%, already $300 billion of those $2 trillion have returned to the United States. And you see so much investment and also in energy. Of course, not everybody's making as much as they would want. And some of these tech companies, especially, that had a lot of money overseas, like Apple and Google, Microsoft, they are announcing, you know, new investments in actual plants. Because at the beginning, a lot of this money that's coming back is going to buying back shares of the company or more dividends for shareholders. But we have Amazon with a new headquarters in New York and in the Washington D.C. area. Of course, it's not built yet. Ford just announced a $1 billion investment, 500 jobs in Michigan. So we can have some manufacturing coming back. But in the medium term, we need to compete with China. China is trying to compete with us in things like robotics, IT, telecommunications, agricultural engineering, and also the fourth industrial revolution means that increasingly machines, robots, driven by artificial intelligence, will replace more human beings. So in the short term, we can afford to try to bring back some manufacturing. But in the medium to long term, the technology cannot be stopped. And I fear that some of the candidates running for president are not addressing this. I think the middle classes and the lower middle classes and the lower classes, they need to hear these things. I don't see the Democrats addressing this issue. And frankly, in 2020, if the economy is doing well and the country's not at war, usually the incumbent president has a big advantage. Mm-hmm.
Let's take a quick break here. We have a few more minutes that we're able to chat with Dr. Alexander Munz-Rubial. We'll pick up our conversation with him in just a couple of minutes. Be right back.
Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler can answer your questions about cremation. Is it appropriate for your loved ones? Should there be a funeral service? Keep in mind that even with cremation, it is time to celebrate how meaningful and important was the life of your loved one. Is cremation appropriate for your family? How would they feel about it? And what's the cost? Cremation has three advantages: simplicity, convenience, and it's local. The Thompson Miller Cremation Program is right here in Butler at our newly created facility. We assure you that your loved one will never leave our care at any point in the process. So let's talk it over privately right here at Thompson Miller in Butler. Call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or online at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller, at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Time for a checkup for your pet. We recommend Suburban Animal Clinic. Or maybe Fido or Tabby's not feeling so well. Suburban Animal Clinic, a small animal veterinary practice located Route 8 south of Butler at the intersection with Thorncrest Drive. It's about 5 miles south of Butler. Suburban Animal Clinic, in the spirit of Dr. Dennis Damon. Their services include wellness checks for your pet, of course, also emergency care. They have laser therapy, dental available, Also, prescription diets. You know, one of the things that are problems for a lot of our pets these days, being overweight. Microchipping, they can handle that as well. Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, south of Butler. If you're headed south from Butler toward Pittsburgh, as soon as you pass all the auto dealerships, start looking on your left. That's Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8 South at Thorncrest Drive. Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey, and on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, we're talking with Dr. Alexander Munz-Rubial. He is a professor of OBS Business School, also a well-known author and a consultant, and we're talking about globalism versus nativism, how to bridge the digital divide. It's the latest book by Dr. Rubial. You mentioned China just before we took the break there, Dr. Rubial. Talk a little bit about the trade war with China. How's that going? Has that affected our U.S. economy? And has it affected globalism versus populism?
Yes. People have to look at the situation with China in the following way. China has a big trade surplus with the United States, which last year was about $300 billion. And actually, in 2018, the trade deficit of the U.S. with China, with regards to 2017, actually grew. So last year, 2018, despite applying tariffs on $250 billion of Chinese exports to the U.S., despite that, still, China's trade deficit with the U.S. increased in 2018 with regards to 2017. And China's economy slowing down, not just because of the tariffs imposed on $200 billion of their exports. Of course, China also retaliated, but also for other factors that are long to explain. China was now growing at 10% in 2009-2010, but that was unsustainable last year. Actually, China grew at its slowest growth rate since 1990. So the talk about China, overtaking the United States is just not true. The U.S. has a GDP of $18 trillion, and China has a GDP of $11 trillion. That's the size of their economy, right? So the problem is that we have a deadline now, March 1st, President Trump and President Xi of China agreed on December 1st to have this truce to the trade war. And by March 1st, they have to have come to an agreement on the issues that the United States and also the European Union feel China has to do better. China cannot force companies investing in China to force over to do transfer technology, these forced technology transfers. China is not protecting intellectual property. It is allowing or abetting cyber theft. So these issues, intellectual property, technology transfers, and also something that not a lot of people are talking about, which is a strategy called Made in China 2025, adopted in 2015 by the communist government, which, by the way, I like Chinese people. They are very hardworking people in China or in America. The Chinese people I have no problem with. I just would like them to have democracy like everybody, like most countries in the world. And so in the government of China in 2015 adopted this Made in China 2025 strategy, which means that they're going to be providing $300 billion in subsidies to 10 sectors, which are advanced sectors of advanced technology sectors, like, for example, IT, robotics, telecommunications, clean tech, electric vehicles, new materials, maritime engineering, agricultural machinery. So they want to evolve. The Chinese leadership understands that the China as this factory that exports, clothes and shoes and toys and consumer electronics, that this is they cannot catch up with the United States, and they have to evolve. And so they want to become a leading producer and exporter of these kind of goods that I talked about. Telecommunications, robotics, IT, and aeronautics also. And so they're subsidizing their companies with $300 billion and have actual targets for 2020 and 2025 of how many percentage of parts for these sectors that I named, the advanced ones, have to be produced by Chinese companies.
Wow, pretty amazing.
They, They're doing some things that should not be done. However, we will see what happens from now to March 1st as to whether, in terms of a pause to the trade war, where China, commits to buying U.S. exports of agricultural products, energy, manufacturing products, that is something China has said they're willing to do. But for China to put down in writing that they will, not do these practices of intellectual property violations and forced technology transfers, and they will stop this these subsidies for Made in China 2025, and actually put that in writing and in a way that if they don't do it, they get tariffs again, I don't think that China's going to go for that by March 1st.
Yeah. Let me ask you one more question. Our time begins to run a little short here, Dr. Rubial, but what specific policy measures do you think could be adopted to help those that are falling behind have less trouble making a decent living?
Yes, and I thank you again so much, Mr. Malarkey, for the possibility. And I do hope that your listeners also understand that I am not against technology. I just myself published my seventh book with Amazon by myself, working with Amazon, obviously, but and it's available as an ebook for only $2.99. So I can put in a plug for my book, right?
Oh, please, yes.
It's not only available as a paperback for $14, but also as an ebook for $2.99. And I use machines all the time. When I go to Giant to buy my groceries, I do it with a machine. And I'm actually teaching now the last 2 years online courses, whereas I was always a professor that taught traditionally in front of students. Now I do it online. So I'm not against technology. I think that things that can be done to help people who can fall behind are obvious ones like lifelong training. Also, Germany, for example, has a very good apprenticeship system. Not everybody needs to have a university degree. In fact, people with university degrees in the humanities often don't make such a good living as people who are, technicians. So vocational and apprenticeship, Germany has a system whereby corporations, the government, and also universities and research centers, they guarantee that if somebody is doing an apprenticeship, is going not for a college track, but somebody's going to become a technician, a plumber, an electrician, they're not going to have a university degree, they are guaranteed a job at a good company and as interns, and then usually they stay with these companies or they go on to other companies. But this kind of working together between the private sector and the governments, administrations, and universities, that's, I think, something that needs to be reinforced in America. I mean, it's been successful in Pittsburgh, for example, but it needs to be scaled up. And sometimes we can't wait for the federal government to do that. We need states and cities to do that. Obviously, I won't tell you all of the ideas in my book because people then would not buy it, right? But but those are some of the ideas, lifelong training. Also, possibly, a levy on robots because, of course, if people are replaced by robots, especially in manufacturing and the automobile sector, then people's paychecks, a part of it goes towards the pension system and also sort of towards health care, especially in Europe. So if a person is replaced by a robot, that robot should pay some kind of levy. Bill Gates has said he's in favor of that. Elon Musk, CEO of Tesla, has admitted that if we replace... There are already 8.6 million robots in the world, and 1.3 million are industrial. But by 2020, which is next year, there should be 3 million industrial robots around the world. So if they replace a person, they should also have some kind of levy, which can, of course, fund the retraining that we're talking about.
Hmm. Well, a lot of other ideas are explored, listeners, in Dr. Rubial's book, Globalism versus Nativism, How to Bridge the Digital Divide. Dr. Rubial, thanks for talking with us. A very interesting conversation. Thanks for being with us today.
It's my pleasure, and I thank you for the time, too.
Butler Health System is a top 100 hospital for getting Doug back to playing with his grandkids and managing his farm.
For ensuring that Craig made it to his daughter's college graduation.
For helping Ray travel to Europe to visit his family.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide nationally recognized care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
Caring hands, remarkable minds. That's Butler Health System.
Hey folks, have you heard about Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center? Yeah, they're located just off Newcastle Road, Shockey Lane, right behind King's and Villa Grande. Gone Postal Butler. They package your items for shipping. And that takes care of a situation that sometimes can be a real bother. You know, you got to get the wrapping paper, the string, the tape, whatever you need. They'll do it for you. And you can ship any way you want to, FedEx, UPS, U.S. Postal Service. They will package your items for shipping at Gone Postal Butler. Other services they offer, copying, scanning, faxing, mailbox rentals, custom boxes. They have an official notary, also greeting cards, even a lottery agent. Gone Postal Butler, 140 Shockey Lane. That's just off Newcastle Road, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants. It's in the Shockey Mini Storage area. For more information, give them a call, 724-841-0044. Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 1230 to 130, right here on WISR 680.